Number of years ago, Amy and I went to explore some of the southwestern states, and we were doing some sightseeing and camping along the way. And on one of our first nights, we found ourselves camping in an open prairie on the outskirts of Amarillo, Texas. And as a wedding gift a few years earlier, we received a simple little tent. But before that particular night in Texas, we'd only used it once, and I was not very skilled at putting it together quickly. When we arrived at our campsite, it was calm and sunny, so instead of setting up our tent immediately and getting settled in, we decided to go find a bite to eat. So we went and did that, and when we left the restaurant, maybe 2 hours later, we were met by howling winds and dark clouds moving our way. We raced back to our campsite to set up our tent, fearing that the storm would last all night. And I was already inexperienced at setting up this tent, but then you add in 60-mile-per-hour winds and pounding rain on top of it. And we did our best, and then we jumped inside, and we used all of our body weight to hold the tent down and keep it from blowing away. We thought we made a big mistake. Why were we now stuck in this thunderstorm on an open prairie? And on top of that, someone told us to watch out for rattlesnakes, and Amy is deathly afraid of snakes. What had we gotten ourselves into? So after about 15 or 20 minutes of pouring rain and pounding wind, the storm passed, as they always eventually do. The dark clouds moved on, replaced by cooler air and a beautiful sunset to enjoy. The tent gave us refuge. All was well in the end. It was scary for a moment, though. In our passages this morning from the Psalms and the Gospel of Luke, I am struck by images of refuge. The psalmist refers to the house of the Lord to shelter in the day of trouble, to cover in his tent, to being set high upon a rock. These images of refuge and safety speak to the psalmist's trust in God's protective care. And these images of refuge are contrasted with conflict imagery in the passage. The psalmist is under attack. Evildoers, adversaries, foes, false witnesses, armies, and enemies have risen against him. And the psalmist says they are breathing out violence. And yet, despite all of this adversity, Psalm 27 is ultimately a song of trust. The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the refuge of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? And the hardships of life make their way toward us, as they always do. The psalmist teaches us that we can seek and trust in God's protective care. But this is not simple. Because when the storms of life hit, they breathe out violence, and we can get swept away pretty quickly. One of my favorite writers on all things faith and theology is a guy named John Pavlovitz. And recently, he published a blog post that deeply resonated with me as I read it and as I was reflecting on the psalm this week. The article is called "Everyone Around You is Grieving. Go Easy." And I recommend reading the whole thing. Maybe I'll share it on our Facebook page or something. But I want to share a good chunk of it with you right now. Pavlovitz writes, "Everyone around you, the people you share the grocery store line with, pass in traffic, sit next to at work, encounter on social media, and see across the kitchen table, all are experiencing the collateral damage of living. They are all grieving someone, missing someone, worried about someone. Their marriages are crumbling, or their mortgage payment is late, or they're waiting on their child's test results, or they're getting bananas 5 years after a death and still pushing back tears because the loss feels as real as it did on that first day. Every single human being you pass by today is fighting to find peace and push back fear, to get through their daily tasks without breaking down in front of the bananas or in the carpool line or at the post office. Pavlovitz goes on to say, everyone is grieving and worried and fearful, and yet none of them wear the signs, none of them have labels, and none of them come with written warnings reading, I'm struggling, go easy. And since they don't, it's up to you and me to look more closely and more deeply at everyone around us at work, at the gas station, or in the produce section, and to never assume that they aren't all just hanging by a thread, because most people are hanging by a thread, and our simple kindness can be that thread. We need to remind ourselves just how hard the hidden stories around us might be, and to approach each person as a delicate, breakable, invaluable treasure, and to handle them with care. These words this week resonated with me on a personal level. As a pastor, I've learned how to walk with people through loss and grief. But these last couple of months, I've struggled with my own sense of loss and grief. I've lived at a distance from my family on the East Coast for many years, but in recent months, following my mom's experience of being hit by a car, that distance has felt greater. And not being around to help in a time of need has intensified those nagging feelings of loss and grief that come from being set apart from family and friend connections. I'm not unique. Many of us live at a distance from home and family. Many of you, maybe all of you, are familiar with the feeling of loss and grief that I'm describing. And you know it's not easy, especially when family is navigating through the storms of life. When we name and acknowledge our own grief, I think we strengthen our awareness of the grief that all people carry around with them. Pavlovitz's recommendation to go easy makes a lot of sense. When it comes to how we handle our loss and grief, our suffering, the Quaker teacher Parker Palmer talks about the broken, open heart. For Palmer, there are two ways for a heart to break. In the face of the world's suffering and our own experiences of suffering, our hearts can either break apart or they can break open. A heart can be broken into 1,000 shards, sharp-edged fragments that become shrapnel that we aim at the source of our pain, and ultimately that becomes an open, unhealed wound that we carry with us. That is a heart that is broken apart. On the other hand, you can imagine a small, clenched fist of a heart that is broken open into the largeness of life, into greater capacity to hold our own and others' experiences of pain and joy. And we know that heartbreak can become a source of compassion and grace because we've all seen it with our own eyes as people enlarge their capacity for empathy and compassion. They enlarge their ability to attend to others' suffering. That's a heart that's broken open. The truth is that we can make that choice for ourselves every day. We can choose to view our broken hearts as broken apart and become bitter and spiteful, or we can choose to view our hearts as broken open into the largeness of life's pain and joy on behalf of others. Jesus lived with a broken, open heart. In our passage from Luke's gospel, we catch another image of safety and refuge, just like we did in the Psalms. To this point, Jesus' ministry has been geared toward the Galilean countryside, but as we get closer to Easter here, we see Jesus starting to shift his attention to Jerusalem. And Jerusalem's the center of religious and political power. In this passage, Jesus laments over what is going on in Jerusalem. And the Pharisees come to warn Jesus to stay away from the city. They tell him that Herod wants to kill him. But Jesus rebukes the Pharisees. He says, "Go tell that fox for me. Listen, I'm casting out demons and performing cures today and tomorrow. And on day three, I'll finish my work." There's a small but really important detail there. To call Herod a fox instead of a lion, which represented the image of royalty, was akin to treason at that time. To call Herod a fox in the presence of the Pharisees signaled revolutionary intent. "Jerusalem, Jerusalem," Jesus says, "the city that kills the prophets and stones those who are sent to it. The people are suffering in Jerusalem, especially the people who are excluded from the halls of power." And Jesus sees their plight and he says, "How often have I desired to gather your children together as a hen gathers her brood under her wings, and you were not willing." With his broken, open heart, Jesus longs to bring the people of Jerusalem to a place of safety and refuge, like a hen gathers in her wings, and give them protective care and liberate them from the religious and political corruption in Jerusalem. Jesus' passion to give refuge to the people reflects God's desire to give all true refuge when we are in need, when we are suffering. God's love is our true refuge during the storms of life. But where does that leave us as a church, as followers in the way of Jesus who live now in the world as it is? I think we are a lifeboat. When the storm hits and the ship starts sinking, we are called to be a lifeboat that helps to bring those in need to refuge. We are there to help. Does that image of a lifeboat resonate with you? One of the pleasant surprises for me during this first year of learning how to be your pastor has been how diverse we are as a congregation. We are diverse in our life experiences. We are diverse in our church backgrounds. We are diverse in our theological perspectives. We are diverse in our political views. We are diverse in our talents and the ways that we contribute to the body of Christ. And to be honest, I've been a part of many Mennonite congregations and several different Mennonite communities, and I have not found many, if any, churches that are as diverse as we are. And that is a gift. It's one of the reasons why we have so much dynamic potential left to discover as a church, and why I believe we have so much to offer this city. We are so diverse and different that I ask myself often, what is it, what in the world is it that brings us together week after week? What links us? And that's still an open question for me. But I do think that one of the major things that links us together in common purpose is our desire to be a lifeboat for people in need of community, in need of prayer, resources, grace, hope, peace, salvation. As I have conversation with you, as I get to know you, I see a common link, a common purpose in helping people. We are a church that goes easy because we are conscious. We strive to be conscious and aware of the suffering in our world. And we are a church with a broken, open heart, enlarged with the capacity to offer compassion. On our sign outside, it says, "Love God, love people," for a reason. The more we do those two things, the more likely we are to help bring those in need and ourselves to true refuge in God's everlasting, all-encompassing love. Now, if there is a word, a single word that gets to the bottom line of what I'm talking about today, it is the word solidarity. I think it was Martin Luther King Jr. who best summed up the meaning of solidarity in his famous letter from a Birmingham jail in 1963. He said, "In a real sense, all life is interrelated. All people are caught in an inescapable network of mutuality, tied in a single garment of destiny. Whatever affects one directly affects all indirectly." All efforts to make our world a more just and peaceful place, which are ultimately efforts to end suffering, are rooted in solidarity and what MLK called the inescapable network of our mutuality. This week, our world witnessed another horrific mass shooting in Christchurch, New Zealand. It was an act motivated by hate. But in response to this act of hate, there are people around the world and in Des Moines this afternoon who are coming together to mourn the loss of life in Christchurch and show solidarity with Muslim communities and all those, including Christian communities, who have been victims of violence and hate. To say that we as a church are to be a lifeboat for people in need is to say that our purpose is desperately important in our world. Our world, our city, our community needs us like we need each other in these pews. The storms of life hit whatever they are in the moment, and we are not people who look the other way. We are people who answer the call for help. We are a lifeboat for a world that desperately needs more lifeboats. As people of Christian faith, we confess that Jesus Christ is our true refuge. And thus we are called to help people find lasting shelter in the love of God offered freely like a gift in Jesus. Storms are powerful when they strike, but they always, eventually, come to an end. They always pass on. On the other side of the storm, there is peace, there is healing, there is hope. In one of her many prophetic visions, the famous medieval mystic Julian of Norwich caught a vision of God's ultimate glory at the very end of time when all of the storms have passed. She described it like this: "All shall be well, and all shall be well, and all manner of thing shall be well. For there is a force of love moving through the universe that holds us fast and will never let us go." May it be so. Amen.